Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Why does making friends as an adult feel so
what
hard?
What should I wear on a first date?
What the hell is a formal?
But that hookup was buying not first good. Home
what
so
do I want my life to look like in 5 years?
We want to know too.
Since 2012, the Every Girl has been an online destination to help women around the world achieve the life of their dreams. Now, we're excited to bring you the same inspiring content with the Every Girl podcast.
Welcome back to another week of the Every Girl podcast. Emma, what is this week's Ask the Every Girl? Let's get right to it.
This week's Ask the Every Girl question is, I need all your tips on how to be more present. I never feel fully present or mindful, and I think it's the main thing holding me back from feeling happier.
It's such Oprah jargon to like be present. I feel like most people are like, what the fuck, WTH, does present even mean?
Yeah, I feel like it's something we throw around a lot without really knowing what it means or how to do it at all. I don't know that I've been present
ever.
No, I mean, it's such a challenge for me. I feel like I'm a very forward-thinking person, like many eldest daughters or high achievers in the chat. Like, my default is thinking so much about the future. I was talking to my friend who's also in her first year post-grad about career and life and trying to figure it all out. And I was like, I feel some shame around not having a totally super clear vision of my whole career path and my whole future. And she was like, it seems like you really know where you're going at work. And I was like, oh, yes. Oh, my God. Thank you so much. And she was like, no, that wasn't a compliment.
Because you're so focused on the future that you're not really focused on the present, meaning?
Yes, exactly. She's like, are you even enjoying it? And I was like, you know, you make a great point there. So I struggle with being present.
I think that's incredibly relatable. I think that everybody has that experience in every area of their life, from career to relationships to friendships. We're always thinking about what we don't have and what we need to get or what's the future going to be. We're always living in the future and like, what's next? Or a lot of us also, or instead of, live in the past where we're overthinking this one thing that happened. So I think that's so relatable. Like, most of us are completely living in both the worry about the past and the worry about the future. Of course, we're never being fully present. It's this almost idealistic advice, like, everybody be present. When people say that during a guided meditation, I'm like, literally, I can't. What does that mean? Am I thinking about the chair that I'm sitting in and only the chair I'm sitting in? Am I thinking about how I'm hungry? Like, what does present even mean? And is it even possible to fully achieve it? To me, feeling present is actually what I've come to define it, being really fully in love with my life. It's not the gratitude checklist. I'm grateful for my cup of coffee. Okay, what else am I grateful for? My dog. It's not the checklist. It's that feeling of like, oh my God, I am so in love with my life. So how I tap into that, this is going to sound counterintuitive, but I feel more, quote, present, or I feel more in tune to the present moment when I tap into both my past and future self. I'm going to take you on a journey that's going to be like, all the ghosts of Christmas past, future, and present. Okay. That's where we're going.
I'm picturing little girl Josie and grandma Josie.
Exactly.
In the room with us.
And I want everyone else to picture their grandma self and their young self also as we're going through this. It could be like a little exercise. Okay.
I'm going to like get emotional.
That yeah. Like, there's going to be tears. I'll start with the future self. So everyone get to their grandma selves.
Okay.
When I notice myself thinking, ugh, I got to take Louie out. I'm so busy today. I don't have time to take him out, but he's got to go to the bathroom. He's at the door and it's like an annoyance. I immediately train myself to go into the feeling of being 90 years old, really, what does that feel like? But just like embodying what that feels like really think about, you're 90 years old. You are not your young 20 self. You are 90 years old. For me, when I think about that, all I would want is to go back in time and to have one more walk with Louis. You know, like he'll be long gone. I would do anything for one more walk. So then it puts things into perspective of like the work can actually wait. Or so much more simple and less dark. But when I start to feel like, ugh, I really don't want to do this workout. Again, 90-year-old grandma, if she could go back to being 28 and she could move her body without any limitations, she would do it and love it. I think that this is also a great practice to tap into in general. Like it doesn't have to be in response to things, just checking in every single morning, every single night. If you could go back in time, if it was your 95-year-old self and they got to go back and relive a day when you're 28, when you're 20, are you 23?
23, yeah.
23, if you're 35, if you're 50, whatever it is, your 100-year-old self, if they could go back and live a day, oh my God, how much different would they live it than the current us living this now? I think that this is so important because the reason it's so hard to be present is because we're so focused on what we don't have yet or what we have yet to accomplish. That's human nature. You know, we have the carrot constantly dangling in front of us. Even when we catch the carrot, there's a new carrot right away. So it's like stopping and realizing. Other examples of this are, I think of this a lot going on vacation and you're so excited for the vacation. And then after the vacation happens, you're thinking, like, I would give anything to be back on a beach and sipping margaritas instead of at work. But then most of us, when we're on a vacation, yeah, a lot of it is fun. We're enjoying it. But then a lot of it is like, oh my God, my stomach hurts. I'm getting a little homesick. Am I drinking too much? Now I'm hungover. I'm worried about how I look in my bathing suit. Most of us are not really present when we're on vacation. We're thinking about what we have to do when we get back. So it doesn't necessarily have to be thinking about 90-year-old me, but it could be thinking of the me in 2 weeks when I'm looking back and being like, oh my God, I wish I was back on this vacation with my friends. I'm not going to spend my time thinking about, am I bloated? What do I look like in a bathing suit? I'm already worried about going home. When's my flight? I'm getting a little homesick. I'm out of my routine, so I'm uncomfortable. I'm not going to spend my time thinking about that because me in 2 weeks is going to be wishing I was here.
I think you keep being like, it doesn't need to be that dark, but I have this little suspicion that maybe it kind of does. In order to fully appreciate the present moment, maybe it is a little bittersweet. It's not all just like, oh my God, I love this moment. I love this moment because it's going to be over.
Because it doesn't last forever.
Yeah. The vacation example is very clear to me. Like when you're on vacation, part of the reason you love being on vacation so much is because the vacation at some point is over.
And it's like realizing that before it's over. And then you're wishing you were back. And I, just on like a average day-to-day basis, if I was 95 years old and I got to relive this average Tuesday, how freaking pumped would my 95-year-old self be to do all the basic things that I don't even think about? When we reverse engineer it and look at now from a future self that doesn't have what we have now, I think that that's present.
That's beautiful. I really like that.
Okay, so then past self. I love to tap into her a lot. It can be any age that you identify with. I love 6-year-old Josie. I feel very close to her. I also love 17-year-old Josie. It could also be like 25-year-old you, 30-year-old you, whatever age you connect with. So for example, I like to think about 17-year-old Josie, who is fighting with her high school boyfriend, going through heartbreak, just like flailing through the world. If she got to see the man that I end up with and the way he makes me laugh and just wants to be around me all the time and is happy to be around me, it makes it really hard to take Joey for granted now when I think about what my 17-year-old self would think. You know, it's easy for me now as 20-year-old me. If Joey's leaving socks on the floor, it's going to piss me off. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when I tap into that 17-year-old self, she would be like, bitch, what are you complaining about? He's leaving socks on the floor. Okay, you're fine. It's also just like the mundane. Like, it's so easy now being in the present, take everything for granted. But if I look at how my 17-year-old self would see this, she would be so pumped. So when I start feeling like I'm in this place, it's getting mundane. Joey and I are going through the motions. I really love to tap into that version of me who would be so pumped of the person that I'm with. And then it's really hard to not be present when you're viewing it through that angle. Another example is I think of 6-year-old Josie looking at my career and looking at my life in general and being like, this is so cool. You know, when you're young, all you want is to be independent and you want to be on your own and you want to have a career and you want to be able to make your own decisions. And then when we're here as adults, we're like, adulting is sad. It's really hard. I don't want this. But how pumped would your young self be to see the life that you have now? That you are living in an apartment on your own? Like, young you would be pumped. That would be so cool. Once we get what we originally wanted, we forget that we originally wanted it because we're focused on the next thing that we want. So I think it's just the way of reshifting our focus to be like, oh yeah, I did really want this. I would be so pumped to know that I got this job or I have this career or I'm adulting. I'm making my own money. How cool is that? My young self would be so amped to see my life now. So those are the two different strategies I use to tap in. I think it really is a good daily practice, like every single morning, really tapping into, if my 95-year-old self got to live this day, how would they view everything? How would they view the mundane? How would they view me going for a walk with my dog? How would they view me sitting at the table with my significant other? And I think the same thing for the young self. If you were like 13 going on 30 and you were the 13-year-old that got to live in the 30-year-old body, how would view everything in your life?
Wow. I love that cultural reference.
Have your Jenna Rink moment. So to circle back to answer this question, I think that being present does not have to be this monk-like experience where we're meditating and in a meditative state constantly and we're like mindful of every sensation. We hear that advice a lot. I think obviously that's great if you can tap into that, but a lot of people, myself included, that doesn't resonate. I think that being fully present is not as much about that meditative state as it is this almost like trippy experience of being able to watch your life like it's a movie and know that you're in a moment you would have appreciated as young you or a memory that you would have looked back on fondly as future you. Presence is just knowing those moments when you're in them.
I love that. That is so helpful, honestly. This is something I really need to learn and work on. I think also being right out of school, if that's all you're trained to do, literally. College, you're just supposed to think about the next thing.
And I don't think it gets any better for most people. In school, you're always thinking of the next grade. What do I have to learn for the next test? So we have to be in that mind frame. And then you're thinking about, what am I going to do after high school? Is it college? Is it this? But then in order to think about what I want to do after high school, I have to think about what I'm going to do in 20 years. We're always focused on thinking about what's next. I think that's true, obviously, in your career. But also in relationships, it's so easy to be like, when am I going to be in a relationship? And then once you're in the relationship, it's not really like we're fully present. Then we're thinking about, when do we move in together? When's the right time to get engaged? Like, how many questions do we get about when do I get engaged? It's about the next step, the next step, the next step. When do we have kids? And I think that's fine. That's human nature. But I also think that in order to counter that, we also have to realize I don't want to live my whole life and look back and realize, oh my God, I didn't enjoy the moments that I wish I enjoyed. I don't want to feel that. You know, so I think that part of that is we have to counteract it by doing certain exercises like this. So we know to appreciate the moments when we're in them.
That is super helpful. I love this. I hope this is helpful for this listener. Girl, I'm right there with you.
Let's dive into today's episode. Dr. Simone Alicia is a female-focused self-esteem expert known as the Self-Esteem Doctor. In this episode, we get into all the nitty-gritty about how to have more confidence and improve your self-esteem. We talk about why manifestation is self-esteem and how working on your confidence will improve everything from your physical health to your career and relationships. Dr. Simone also gives amazing tips to stop comparing yourself to others and how to get rid of negative thoughts once and for all. You are going to want to re-listen to this conversation, send this episode to your best friends or your little sister. Open up a note on your phone preemptively because every woman needs to hear this conversation. Yeah. Welcome Dr. Simone Alicia to the show. So good to meet you.
I feel the same. I was researching you today and I'm like, I love her. She's so
amazing. Oh my God, you're the best. I have been so excited for this conversation.
Thank you for having me. Literally an honor.
I was looking at all the things you cover and all the types of people you talk to and such dynamic resources for women. I was like teary-eyed listening to some of the stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, I get to be on here. Like, Simone, you did this.
You are making my life right now. You are making my life. Let's dive right into it. First question for you. I know that your work focuses on empowering women through improving their self-esteem. When did you first realize that women specifically needed help improving their self-esteem?
My very, very first indication of this started with a little girl. I was teaching elementary school. I'm teaching third grade. And this little girl comes up to me with concern in her eyes. And she's like, Miss, am I fat? 8 years old. And I'm like about to start sobbing in the middle of the classroom. I almost want to yell at her like, that person. But I'm like, she needs you. I have no answers for her. I couldn't believe that that's what she was concerned with at that age. Simultaneously, I was also modeling at the same time. So I would be backstage with these other models who are the gorgeous people. And they were back there tearing themselves apart. And it was always usually the women. You know, I'm so fat and I can't believe this. And I look like this and I look like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? And I kept having this theme. Someone needs to talk about self-esteem. Someone needs to talk about confidence. And I was like, I think this is my thing. I think I'm the somebody. And then when I said to myself, wow, this is running the gamut from childhood to the so-called beauty industry, where you would think these people felt highly of themselves or they're being paid to walk down a runway. And I said, wow, if you don't feel it as a child at the most innocent stage, and you don't feel it when you were, you know, proclaimed to be beautiful and being paid for your beauty, then when do you feel it? Like, who's teaching this stuff? I had the blessing of being really naive. That's my excuse. And I'm sticking to it. I just was like, you're going to pay me to walk down this thing? Yeah, let's go. I didn't really give it much thought about, like, am I perfect enough? And that doesn't mean I'd never had any issues with my own body image or anything like that. It just wasn't a thing for me. It didn't occur to me to care. So I think that was really huge for me when I saw that. And I was like, wow, this is a thing. And I think I'm the person to address it.
So do you feel like your journey with self-esteem, it sounds like, have always had a good self-esteem?
I think that there's always going to be this area or this thing, you know, like, I wish I was smaller. My mom was very short. My mom's 5'3". My dad is 6'4". I'm like 5'9½". So growing up, when I was that tallest girl, I'm like, I want to be shorter and cute like my mom. And she has these tiny little feet. And I wanted all the things she had. So I definitely have to say I experienced awareness that there were differences or things I would prefer. But there was something in me, and I really think it was the divine thing planted in me, because there was something happening that I was aware of that kept me off of that very low, deep, dark self-esteem place and told me this is what I'm supposed to be bringing to other people. And then I just investigated it and brought it.
What do you think that thing was?
Ooh, this is getting juicy, girl. Okay, so a lot of self-esteem issues is a matter of our focus, where we're giving our attention and how much of our attention we're giving. So I start to use analogies like, okay, imagine it's a seed and you're watering that seed with your emotions, your flowing emotions. You're very angry, you're very sad, and you just kind of flow emotions on that sad seed. And then you give the sunlight of your attention. You illuminate like, this is not working. This is not working. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with this? You're comparing. When you water that seed with that attention and emotion, then you start to see that starts to grow. So you just kind of grow this negative understanding of yourself and you focus on all the bad. You focus on what's not working. You focus on how much better that person's doing. It starts to grow like a garden of weeds in your mind and it takes over. And now you can only see the world through that lens. That's what's in your head. That's the filter that you've created in your brain. And that's what you see the world through. I had this, I guess, let's call it a gift for lack of a better word, to kind of ignore those things. I would just be like, man, I wish I was shorter. Like, I'd be so much cuter. Oh, well, I'm tall and gangly and I'm just going to be a model because models and athletes are tall. So I'm just going to do that. Who cares? I would dismiss it and find my own reason why this is going to work for me. And I think I just use that as a tool throughout my life. And later on, when I studied neurolinguistic programming, I was like, whoa, I was doing some fancy stuff when I was 8.
I'm interested where you think self-esteem is established. I know you give the example of the young girl who's already questioning the worth of her body. Do you think that self-esteem, whether it's high, low, wherever, is something that we're born with, or is it something that changes and evolves and can be cultivated over time?
Oh, such a good question. I actually think that because it comes down to programming, that at the end of the day, it is something that we can nurture and change. As we are growing and maturing, there are more than enough tools to shift that because it is a matter of programming. And when I say programming, I mean the things that we're seeing, hearing, repeating, learning, talking about, watching, the things that we're exposed to really help to feed and nurture that side of us. You know, is it going to be positive? Is it going to be negative? And then, of course, there's our own inner processing of what we see, which also contributes to it. There's a certain determination, your intention. There's a lot of little factors that go into it. So overall, I would say the younger we start, we can say it's a bit easier. But I also think that no matter how old you are, if you've got the desire and somebody hands you the tools, I've seen it too many times with my own clients, you are going to make the transformation.
It's so easy for a lot of us to look at people that we think are amazing, have everything, and think they must have high self-esteem. You know, we look at celebrities and think, if only I was that beautiful, if only I was that rich, if only I was that successful, I would have a good self-esteem, I would have confidence. But then we hear from celebrities or from other people we look at thinking they have it all. And they're like, I'm struggling. I hate myself. I hate my body. I hate the way I look. So it's almost like these external factors, how we look, our income, how successful we are, actually do not determine our self-worth and our esteem whatsoever. Have you found that?
100%. 100% true. Imagine, let's say, a Christmas tree. The tree itself has to exist, and then you can decorate it. And then you put the ornaments on it. You are the tree. You've got to actually find the love within yourself first. And then when you feel that stability, and then you add the money to it and add the riches and the wealth and the yacht and the fame, then it's something you can enjoy more holistically. But to say, I am not a tree, I'm just going to throw ornaments in this box and then think that I'm going to be confident, that's just not how it works. It's so cliche to say, but it really is an inside job. It's just not something that you buy on the outside. It's not something other people validate for you. And when we do that comparison, that's the danger. And we can investigate that and find further that, hold on a second, what are you dealing with? What do you call it? How are you handling it? And then we get a lot of language differences too that can help to explain how we're thinking and feeling about ourselves, which is how I define self-esteem, by the way. How we think and feel about ourselves in our lives is how I define self-esteem, which means we can nurture the way we're thinking and we can shift that, and we can nurture and shift the way we're feeling. So now we're empowered. And that's why I don't just think it's something, oh, you're born with it. Sorry for you. I think you can definitely nurture it and cultivate it for sure.
I love the Christmas tree example because I can think of so many instances where even myself, I've had times where I've been like, I'll love myself and feel better about myself if I lose 10 pounds, if I get this promotion, if I get a relationship. And in that way, it's like you're trying to put all these artificial things on the tree without first acknowledging, whoa, I'm a freaking Christmas tree. It's got to start there, and then you can decorate and feel good about the decoration. But if you're just decorating without knowing you're a badass fucking tree, you won't feel that esteem. What is the difference between confidence, self-worth, and self-esteem, self-love, all of these other words we talk about?
I definitely recognize the value of language. I mean, neuro-linguistic programming, which is one of the things I'm certified in, is really all about the language of the mind. But it's not just the actual verbiage or the word we use. It's really what it means to you. So as I've studied so many of these things, I've found people wanting to argue about the difference between self-love versus self-esteem versus self-care versus self-worth. For me, I just don't think that's a worthwhile battle. By no means, just because I don't want to differentiate doesn't mean that you shouldn't or you shouldn't find clarity in that. But for me, I just feel like let's get to the actual heart of the matter. And quite biochemically, the heart is a part of this journey, and self-esteem or any of those things dealing with the self can't be discussed without going into a spiritual space to a certain degree. That's just how my views are built. And so as I started to look into the self-love, the self-care, the self-esteem, the self-worth, self-efficacy, all the things, I was like, fundamentally here, what we have to have is this deeper understanding of our capability, our potential as human beings with this spiritual element to us, that there is an unstoppable element. There is a powerful element. There is a bigger than physical element. And if we can tap into it under any label you want to put it, then we can see differences in our lives, positive, powerful differences in our lives. And we can live in that state. We're just not surrounded by it enough to believe that. And we really have to step outside of the norm in many cases to really live that. But it is a spiritual experience under whatever name you want to call it. It requires you to really tune into yourself and see, how do I do that without taking power away from someone else? How do I do that without thinking I'm the best thing that's ever walked the earth compared to other people? How do I do that in a place that really comes from understanding I'm really powerful and I was built that way, and so are you? That's the power to me.
Wow. I want you to talk more about comparison. I don't know if like artificial self-esteem is the right word, but I think so many people are searching for self-esteem and how I compare to others. I actually was even talking to another guest about how women have been programmed to kind of have this cognitive bias to assess our other, quote, competitors. Like, they're better than me in all these ways. It's like, let me check my threats. Let me look at my social media feeds. Let me see the other women in my life, whatever it is. And let me compare. Well, I'm not as pretty as her, but I'm more successful than her. Or maybe I don't have my dream job like she does, but I have a relationship and she doesn't. Like, I think that we're trying to define and find self-esteem through comparison. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work.
Josie, this is so good. Oh my gosh. Okay. So the problem is, number one, we're trying to find this one definition of what is self-esteem, what is confidence, what is beauty, what is perfection, what is success. We're looking for this one pretty box to stuff 9 billion people in. That box does not exist. By design, we are different. And what we are aiming for, what we're here to accomplish and achieve are different things. Number two, to a certain degree, comparing and seeing what's happening in the world and flowing together has some degree of normalcy in the sense that, you know, okay, we've all agreed not to walk naked in the streets. So if I walk out there naked, I'm gonna check, okay, so yeah, maybe I can't do that. But then I'm on the beach and I'm like, oh, okay, everyone's in a bathing suit. Okay, I can put on a bathing suit now, right? So there's a certain degree of looking and seeing what's happening in the world. And sometimes those comparisons, when used in a healthy way, can be a tool that gives me more options. It can tell me like what the potentials are. I can be inspired. I can realize, oh my gosh, I didn't know there was such thing as a podcast, or I didn't know there was an online magazine. You know, now I know, and maybe I can shoot for that if that feels like it's in my spirit. So I think there's one level where looking at what the world is doing is going to be normal. It's going to be natural. It's going to happen. The problem I think comes in when we have no sense of self as we do that. So if I am empty in terms of I don't know what my value is, I'm pretty sure there is no value. I doubt every single thought I have, every word I say. I'm completely insecure. I have no clue who I am or why I'm here. And now I'm searching for all of you, everyone out there, to fill in these answers for me. I think that's where the problem is, because now I think I'm supposed to be a TV show host because you are. And I think I'm supposed to be a celebrity because that person is. And so I'm never really hearing what that internal call is. I'm completely ignoring my internal compass or disconnected from it. And so I am like flailing out in the sea, trying to be everything and everyone that I'm not. And that has nothing to do with my calling or my inner self or what I'm really here to do. That becomes this toxic, fake, artificial self-esteem that you're talking about, because I'm really trying to do other people esteem and apply it to myself. There's one of the classes that I teach in my academy, and I say, you may set this ceiling for yourself based on somebody else's performance. That's what someone's doing, but their ceiling might be your floor. That might be the base of where you're supposed to be, because your journey is different. And that doesn't mean you're better than them. It means that that's their ceiling and that's your floor. Once we are able to turn up the inner voice a little bit more, once we're able to really say, okay, well, who am I? Who am I? Then when we look out there and see, okay, this person is married, I'm like, good, I don't want to be married. You don't want to really think about it. Or when I look at this person, I'm like, I'm glad you have $1 billion and my turn is coming. We can look at it so differently, because we'll be assessing through a different set of lenses where we actually feel good about who we are and what we're here to bring to the table. And I think that's the part that takes the work.
So would you say that self-esteem is not just what I think a lot of people think of it, which is looking in the mirror and thinking, I'm perfect, and it's more of knowing self?
I would definitely agree with that. I would say knowing who you are and knowing that you have a certain degree of power. You're not powerless. You are not empty. You have a value. And your job really is to figure out, what seed am I? And when I water and nurture the seed, what am I going to become? Listen, do not give me any plants to actually raise and grow for you, because let me tell you, the empty pot you're going to get back filled with dirt. I have not yet mastered that part. Human seeds, that's my jam. When you get those seeds, I don't know an apple seed different from a whatever, to find out what that seed was. For me, I'd have to water it. I would have to plant it. I'd have to really put it out there and watch it grow. And then I'd be like, oh, look at this thing blossoming and becoming the fullness of itself. And that apple seed has nothing to do with the cantaloupe seed. It has nothing to do with the watermelon seed. You're an apple seed. So your job is to become the fullest version of that. And the way you do that is not by throwing your water out there and looking at what everyone else is doing. The way you do that is by nurturing self. And then just when you're afraid, like, oh, wait, I can't just nurture my own seed. That's so selfish. I can't stand these self-esteem gurus and their selfishness. No. Hold on. After you water that seed and that grows into this beautiful, full expression of an apple tree, it bears fruit. Those fruits, that is what you are meant to give to the world. Now you have apples to give to the world. That was your job, not to hand out cantaloupes, not to hand out strawberries and watermelon. Your job is to bring apples to the world. And so you need to grow to the fullest version of yourself. You need to be watering inside and putting that sunlight of attention on who you are so that you can give what you really came to this planet to give. And that's your job. Find out what seed you are and water it.
Wow. I am obsessed with this analogy. When you're a seed, if you're just like this little bud and you look at this tulip next to you and you're like, damn it, I wish it was a tulip. That tulip is so freaking pretty. All I want is to be the tulip.
Yep.
You don't even know that you're about to grow into an apple tree.
Or an oak tree and tower over the entire forest. You have no idea. And even if you're not the oak tree, if you are the apple tree, you have a different job and we need you. We need you in the garden. We need you in the orchard. We need you in the forest. We need you to bring what you came here to bring. We don't need you to try to dilute who you are and try to become someone else, because you can't become anything else than what you were designed to become. And the effort to do so is where that pain comes, and that depression and that anger and that frustration and that anxiety, because you are literally trying to accomplish the impossible. You will not become a cantaloupe. You came here to be an apple, honey. And we need to start to have that confidence in, okay, so how do I really embrace my seed and nurture that seed confidently when I think I'm looking around at all the tulips and I'm like, well, mine's not even budding yet. What's going on? Your attention to it is what's going to grow it. Your attention to the tulips is not going to grow your particular seed.
And we can look at all the other flowers and look at all the other plants and say, wow, how beautiful. Look at what you're doing to our garden. That's amazing. But it does not take away from what I am growing into.
100%. That's that spirit of celebration. That's that spirit of connection, collaboration, community, and just being able to be really one, that sense of oneness with everyone is that, hey, we're all here to express and we're all here to become and we're all here to add to the beauty of it. And you're here to do your part. I want to do mine. And that to me is where you start to feel really secure in yourself, which doesn't mean you don't have moments of doubt. It doesn't mean you don't have moments of nervousness. It doesn't mean you don't have moments of what am I doing? But it's definitely an overarching current that kind of just flows underneath and behind the scenes of, I know I'm becoming. I know I'm becoming. I know I'm becoming. And that will carry you through much further than you even know.
I know this is going to sound like maybe a weird question, but I'm curious why self-esteem is important. I'm curious how self-esteem impacts our life besides the obvious that we feel good about ourselves and we all want to feel good about ourselves. How does self-esteem impact our life otherwise?
Okay. First of all, Josie, we need to take our show on the road because these questions.
I'm so glad.
Oh gosh, I love that because I want people to understand there is a purpose behind this work. It is literally the lens through which we see the world. It determines how we approach everything in life. And it also has biochemical effects on our physical body. So now we're talking about physical health. When you are feeling really good about who you are and you're seeing the world through a more optimistic lens, this is not about fake. It's just about choice. Things are really bad in the world. Check. Things are really good in the world. Check. Which one are you staring at? That's going to determine how you're feeling most of the day. So you can choose this particular focus, this particular path. And what happens now is that because I'm feeling optimistic, because I'm feeling hopeful, I now can recognize opportunities when they come to me. So an opportunity comes, instead of me being like, nothing ever works out anyway, who cares? I'm much more likely to say, I got an opportunity. Let's see where this goes. So I'm taking opportunities in my life, which may lead to whatever your goals are. You want money, you want fortune, you want fame, you want marriage, you want love, you want kids. These are opportunities. And you have to be able to recognize opportunities when they come. You also have to be able to set yourself up for opportunities. So whether it's academic prowesses, whether you're going to be going to school or college or whatever, well, I'm not smart enough. I'm not going to apply to that college. I'm not good enough. I'm not going to apply to this job. That's self-esteem. So the way you are thinking and feeling about yourself will determine those decisions that you're making, and the way you tackle opportunities, the way you even perceive them before you can decide to tackle them. So all these different areas of your life really get affected by the way you are thinking. Your brain and heart are like the powerhouses in the center of this whole experience. So if you can have your heart and your mind aligned in a way that says, I can do this, you're going to take more chances. You're going to bounce back from adversity quicker. Your physical body will be in a state of healing more often than in a state of negativity and your body's breaking down and the cells aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. You can actually just have a healthier physical lifestyle due in part to mindset and how your heart's beating and how you're thinking and feeling. So now we've got physical health, which then, of course, can potentially lead to your longevity. And then with all of that, we're talking about relationships. I mean, it's just a big spiraling effect on how your quality of life really is turning out to be. It really starts with, am I worthy of any of this? Can I accept that job? Am I worthy? Can I apply? Can I make that friend? Will I talk to this person and date them and maybe have a relationship? Am I worthy of being a mom? Can I handle it? Am I going to fail? Some of these questions obviously are normal. We're human. We're going to wonder if we can do this, but that final answer is going to be determined by the way you are thinking and feeling about yourself and your capability in this world.
I have come to understand that manifestation is really just self-esteem.
Oh, did you just give me chills? Yes, you did. Oh, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more.
Like you're saying, our actions are completely determined by our self-esteem. I've said this before in the podcast, but like self-esteem is our ceiling. So what we believe we're capable of is the max. So if we're thinking, I've always been in shitty relationships, so I really am only capable of or worthy of shitty relationships, why would you ever think you're going to have your soulmate walk in and be the best relationship of your life? You're thinking, I'm only worthy of shitty relationships.
If the soulmate slips through the cracks and walks in the door, you are going to loop him under the crappy relationship category and you are not going to talk to him and you are not going to pursue that.
That's right. And same thing with career opportunities, with money, abundance, everything. I've actually noticed this within myself. I consider myself to be someone with a lot of confidence, a lot of self-esteem. But the past year or so, I've been like, I kind of have this narrative that I'm not good with money. I'm not a good business person. And maybe that's been the narrative I've told myself, but I've realized that that's a self-esteem issue. That's me telling myself I'm actually not capable of or not worthy of making more money, having a more successful career. So it's rewriting these things so that my ceiling can expand because my self-esteem expands.
Yes. And actually that feeling, those little moments of doubt, I would say that feeling of wobble, that feeling of like, oh my gosh, am I good enough? Like business, this, that. Is literally the feeling of your ceiling rising. It's the actual visceral experience of I'm about to break through this ceiling and create a new ceiling. And if you think again, a little bit more practically, if I were to break through a ceiling, would that feel good? Maybe not initially. I'm assuming that would hurt a bit. That is actually the feeling of you now feeling challenged to go to this next level. Like, of course I can make, you know, X amount of $1,000. I'm amazing. And now you are interested in another level. And you're like, well, could I make that much money? Wait a second. Can I do that part of a business? Wow, like this is an evolution and my ceiling is changing. And so here comes some doubts. And that is not the moment to succumb to doubts. That's the moment to turn up your tools. And what I found is unfortunately, sometimes when we have high self-esteem, we don't know why or how. We just, I naturally have it and I had it since I was a kid. And the problem is that if a big enough adverse thing happens to you and you don't know how to bounce back because you've never actually had a strategy for self-esteem, when something happens, then it's a little bit tough to actually bounce back because you don't know what steps you were taking to actually build that self-esteem. What was I doing? How did I do that? And how can I do it now that my dreams are changing?
I love what you just said about the wobbling being the ceiling expanding. I think that that's really important for people to hear. Listen to that again, really internalize that, because I think that there's all these times, I'll use examples from my own life where I've noticed this, where opportunities have come in. There's been some like really big people that have been like, hey, you want to get lunch? And I'm like, I'm not worthy to go to lunch with you. And then I stop myself. And that feeling of me being like, oh, I'm not ready yet. That's my ceiling starting to wobble. And I can either choose to say, no, I am ready because my ceiling is trying to expand and it's up to me to allow it to. Or I can succumb to that and be like, yeah, you're right. I'm going to take my ceiling back down and just stay at equilibrium. You get the choice.
Yes. And okay, and right there, you just opened the door for us to talk about the inner voice. So we have these thoughts. Okay, I let me in the seeds. Okay, guys, it's just going to be a lot of seeds today. It's spring. I don't know. Maybe that's why. But okay. So I like to think of thoughts as seeds that are just kind of blowing around, right? They're coming in. So every now and then you'll say, my gosh, why did I have that thought? What is wrong with me? But I'm like, no, that wasn't mine. It popped in and I decide which seeds I'm going to grab a hold of and plant and which seeds I'm like, keep it moving, sister. Like, I'm not planting that. So when you have that opportunity to say, okay, wow, I'm not gonna take this meeting. Whoa, I am not ready. That was a seed. It was a suggestion. And then once you have this habitual inner talk or this self-talk that's kind of ready or primed or that you've practiced, and your self-talk comes in and is like, hold on, honey, I understand you're feeling a little bit nervous about this, but the ceiling is expanding. You're literally manifesting amazingness in your life. Get your butt into that meeting ASAP and shut it down. And so you start to take that action. And so now we start to talk about inspired action. It's not just staring at the seed that's telling you, I can't do this while you're putting your makeup on. It'll pop in and out. But for the most part, you want to take control. You want to be behind the driver's seat of your own thoughts there and be like, I am going. Yes, I'm a little nervous. And you know what? I'm human. Fine. I'll get over it. I'm a little nervous. I don't have to lie to myself, but I am going. And I'm going to recognize this as an opportunity. And I'm going to recognize the greatness of me getting this call. And I'm going to recognize my role in manifesting this call, that I had to be in some kind of vibrational alignment because obviously I have a degree of readiness that maybe I'm not even aware of. And you start coaching yourself with that inner dialogue that's intentional, not just letting the seeds that are blowing in lead your life and tell you like, no, I won't do this. No, I can't. Close the ceiling. Stay where you're at. We're not listening to you. We're going to take action and we're going to navigate that self-talk so that it helps to propel me forward. Because at the end of the day, one of our human needs that Tony Robbins talks about is a need for growth. And if we're not growing, we're dying. So we need to be able to move forward in our own terms, in our own pace. But when those opportunities come, even when the challenge comes with it, you want to tune that self-esteem and tune that self-talk to grab hold of that opportunity and take it with both eyes wide open and your heart super open and ready.
You better call me anytime you get an invitation, because I'm going to be like, girl, open that ceiling.
Raise that freaking ceiling. If only I had you in my ear all the time. That would be great. Right.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sitting on your shoulder from now on. Yep.
Simone, get here. It was so good. So much of our audience, I know, is hearing this, being like, I've been there. I've had those moments where I'm looking in the mirror saying, I'm not good enough. I've had those moments where I'm presented an opportunity and saying, I'm not ready for it. But what are some other moments of the lack of self-esteem showing up that people may not be aware of?
I think that sometimes in our reactions, when we're getting even angry or mad or sad about things, can sometimes be a reflection of where our self-esteem is. But I want to pause and say, this conversation is never about you getting to this stage where you're just going to like sit and smile through everything like a robot. This is not the goal. I just want to be very clear. Just because we talk about having a happier life or being a little bit more confident with your opportunities doesn't mean you're not going to have a moment where you're sad or a moment where you're doubtful or a moment where you question things. The goal here is not to eradicate all those moments. The goal here is to use those moments as springboards to open the ceiling and get to the next level if it's the time to do that. The goal here is to make sure we're not moving in, building a house and sitting in these negative emotions and be like, this is where I live now. I'm just going to be angry. Like, no, I feel angry. Absolutely. But I'm also ready to climb that emotional ladder and get to a better emotion that helps me to manifest what I actually do want. How can I use this? How much time do I need to sit with this? So I just want to make sure I put that out there so that as we talk about these things, you're not feeling like, oh my gosh, I can never be sad again. No, we're not saying that. But there are different places and times where self-esteem is navigating and driving the car or the vehicle of your life, and you don't even know it. Those emotions that you're having, if you're getting really angry about something, if you feel like you're reacting in really big reactions to things that people are saying, people's opinions, then you can kind of see that's a place I'm not strong. I'll tell you in my own life, if I have something I want to do, but I'm not fully certain about it, and I'll say it to my husband, and then he's like, well, you know, X, Y, Z. And I'm like offended. I'm like mad. I'm big mad. I'm like, you don't know my life. But then I realized, like, wow, what was that for, Simone? I'm like, because I wasn't certain. I wasn't certain in what I was saying. And so when you offer something in opposition, I was very reactive because I wasn't sure yet. And that's like the analogy they give. Y'all know I'm going to say it, another plant and seed related thing. I mean, you would think I have a garden, but I've heard this. I think it was like Napoleon Hill, or I don't want to misquote, but one of the greats of the past said that when you do plant your seed and you're growing and it's just like a little sapling, that's not the time to share it, because somebody can come up to you at that time where you're trying to grow something and be like, what's that? You know, they kind of rip it right out of the ground or stomp on it. And it wasn't really strong enough to sustain itself yet. So when they say grow things in your heart and keep it in the dark a little bit until you're really strong, there's some real truth to that. So what I've learned to do for myself is wait till I actually do feel confident in a particular idea or concept before I decide to share it. And that way, when I share it, if you're like, Simone, that'll never work, I'm like, that's what you think. I already grew this thing to an oak tree, baby. You can't squash this. So I feel really good. So even in those moments when I'm receiving advice, I know when I'm not feeling fully confident, because your advice will shake me. And when I'm feeling really confident, your advice cannot even touch me. I will respect it and I'll embrace it. And I will see if it adds anything, adds value to what I can do to improve, but it's not going to shake me at my core. So keep an eye out for those moments where you're feeling really sensitive, and sensitivity is good. But if you're feeling like you're overreacting to something, or you're just like super scared or super angry, all these big emotions are happening, it can be self-esteem. Even some health issues, feeling lethargic, can be related to self-esteem. This is your heart and your mind we're talking about. So whatever's going on in there is going to affect everything. So keep an eye out for health, tiredness, and of course, those big emotional responses. And that could be significant also.
I'm thinking of so many examples where self-esteem is probably at the crux of it. Like people that feel the need to comment negative things on Instagram, on celebrities' Instagram, on the Every Girl Instagram. On my Instagram, I always feel bad for those people, because I can't even imagine what state your self-esteem is in that you feel the need to comment and to spread that negativity. I also think, like your example of being in a relationship, the best relationships are the ones that like expose where our self-esteem needs work, because we're triggered not because of what someone else is like, someone else isn't putting us down, but because they're exposing, like we almost have like the safety in that relationship to be able to be like, oh, I'm triggered. What's going on here? It's not because they actually said anything that was upsetting to me. It's because I was upset because it wavered my self-esteem.
Yes. Yes. So good. And just to touch on those people online really quick. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Go off. Go
listen. Listen. But like, why? I've literally asked myself why. And then I realized, you know, it's just like when we have good news and you want to call up a girlfriend, you just can't wait to share it. I find it to be similar with people who are in pain. And when I had to kind of make a visual to explain this to one of my clients once, I said, I want you to imagine someone is carrying a weight. It's like a 200-pound weight. If anyone goes to the gym or picks up any weights, at first, things are doable, right? You're like, oh, I got this. Look at me. I'm strong. And then usually you put it down. But if you are in a situation where that weight, that negative thing in your life, you quote unquote can't put down or don't know how to put down, you're carrying that weight. You are getting weakened and weakened and weakened by that. You're being pushed down physically as a verb, depressed, like pushed down by this weight. And as soon as you see someone else, it seems like they're just walking along, not having that weight. Like they look happy and light as a feather. You're like, you know what? I'm going to throw some of this weight on you because I don't see why I have to carry this by myself. Here's a weight. Let me give you some of this. And it's their reality. But they need to share it because they're like, I cannot accept that you are out here so happy. I can't accept that is real because if it was real, I would have some. If it was real, I'd be doing it. Obviously, it's fake. You're lying. And I'm going to attack because I need to get this weight off of me. And that's the problem when you don't have the tools, because when you have the tools, you go inside and say, how do I remove this weight? How do I feel better? But when you have no tools, you say, I'm throwing this weight on you because we're both going to carry it. I think it's literally a lack of options for how to get out of the situation that they're in. And that's why there's just no point in even trying to battle that. It takes a lot to not be affected by stuff like that. I'm traditionally very sensitive and I try to give so much love and I really like the world I live in where I surround myself with people who send that love back. So if anyone slips through the crack of my little love fest that I'm having and they have something to say, I have cultivated this little delete button in my mind and I will just straight up like delete. I literally imagine something that's in my head that won't stop. I literally imagine that it gets behind this delete button. I press delete and I imagine it just disappears. And I will do that as many times as I need to. And so it gives me something to do with the thought besides ruminate over it and worry about it and think about it. And I just keep deleting it. And then I was like, okay, honey, this is going to roll over to social media.
I love the delete button. I'm going to now practice that all the time.
As a matter of fact, I was talking to my daughter about the physical delete button on Instagram and somebody wrote something like, and they like put effort because it was like a paragraph. And the minute I picked up the tone, I just stopped reading and hit delete. Now, historically, many of us have that desire, but what did you say? It's going to drive me crazy. I need to know what you said. What my programming says, if I read this whole thing and read it again to understand it, it is now going to be etched in my mind a little bit more. Like literally, there's going to be a synaptic connection that just connected in my brain, neurons that had to fire and wire together to understand what you said. And the more that fires, then it's more of a memory and it's more in me. And now I'm going to activate emotions and I'm going to feel bad. And I know this whole train is coming. So I don't even know what it said. My daughter's like, what did it say, Mom? I'm like, girl, I didn't read that. Honestly, I understand the desire to know, but the work is going to be more for me. And if I had to pick, do I nurture your pain or do I nurture my joy? I have to do my joy. So you get deleted. And that was that. Yeah. And that's a habitual practice in my life.
I think there's also a human need to respond a lot of times, whether it is on social media or whether it is your coworker is saying something kind of bitchy to you and you feel the need to respond or just like ruminate. I think people get so caught up in like, what did they mean by that? So I think just the act of being like, delete, I'm prioritizing and protecting my joy.
Yes.
First, yes. Before anything else, before whatever the other human needs are, delete.
Yes, 100%. And then it gives you something to do with this thought. Because people will say, this thought keeps popping in my head. Big facts. These are facts. They're popping in your head. I'm not going to tell you they're not popping in your head. Be positive. Oh, I cannot stand the advice that's like not advice. So when it pops in your head, you need to do something with it. So neurolinguistic programming is a set of tools that we use where we actually are looking at the language of the mind, like how is my brain representing this? How is my brain seeing this? Is it popping up in the right side of my brain? Like if I was to see a picture in my mind, does it seem like it's on the right side that I'm reading this email or this message or this review? Does it seem like it's really bright? Is it really close to me? How can I just get rid of that image that I'm holding in my head rather than studying it and seeing how it makes me feel and wondering what's going on with that person and seeing what I should say to them? I want to get rid of this picture. This picture is going to tie to chemical signatures in my body. It's going to set off emotions in me. And then I'm going to have a domino effect during my day because I'm going to be very upset. So how do I stop this using actual tools in my mind? And in this case, NLP or mental imagery. And I will literally just go in there and just delete this picture or completely move it around or erase it. Like any visual light. So it comes to me 10 times, I delete it 10 times. It wants to come 100 times, I got something for you. I'm not going to be lost and let you take over my brain. Every time you come, I'm going to do something with you. So I get that power of, I did something. But the something I did was not ruminate. The something I did was this attempt to delete. And after a while, my brain will be like, I keep sending you this signal and you keep on not picking up. So I'm going to stop sending it.
I'm thinking about all these different instances that I ruminated on, even if it was just temporarily impacted my self-esteem. I know that our listeners can probably think of 1,000 examples where your boss said something that made you not feel good. You know, your significant other made you feel something that didn't make you feel good. You didn't get picked for the volleyball team. We go through so many different moments of rejection and anger from other people. Like, we go through all these different things that if we let it, I see how it might impact our self-esteem. Going back to that Christmas tree example, if we're constantly hearing you're not a good Christmas tree, if you're letting that come in and you're not deleting it, eventually you're going to start believing, maybe I'm 100%. Not a good Christmas tree.
100%. And there's a ton of different tools you can use for that. And I'm just feeling like in my instincts right now that there's someone out there that's saying to themselves, what if people are just awful? Like, why do I have to keep deleting and I have to keep like rearranging myself when people are awful? Like, what do I do in those cases? And honestly, I think that there's a little bit of discernment that comes in there to say, all right, so who am I surrounding myself with and how much choice do I have in this? And then you can take it to higher and higher spiritual levels where you're kind of like, I want to align to the better part of this person. Because for every single human on the planet, whether they're acting in really positive, negative, awful ways, somebody out there has a family. Someone out there has someone who loves them, even if they're awful to you. So I feel like there are many parts to all of us, right? I can be super crazy, like party animal, and then I can be really solemn and somber. We have different parts of us that we bring to the table depending on what the environment is. So I sometimes say if I get to a little bit of a higher spiritual place in the way I'm perceiving my environment, I keep asking and praying and manifesting to align to, not to change this person, but to align to a different part of this person, the more pleasant side of this person. So if you are a situation where you're like, okay, it's my mom, like I'm not going to run away and never talk to her again, but this is how she is. So number one, you can navigate the amount of time you spend with this person. Number two, you can try to align again from a spiritual place. This can be journaling, prayer, meditation, chanting, whatever it is, to the more positive part of this person and start to celebrate and note anytime, you know, what you pay attention to grows. So note every time you attract a nicer part of this person. And then we will start to manifest more of that because that's what we're paying attention to. And then the other component is, of course, navigating your own self-esteem as well and not saying, well, because of you, I'm this way. No, because of you, you're feeding all this crap in that I have to keep on fighting, but I have to keep on deleting. But there are more things that you can do. And I want us to take that power as much as we can, both inside and in that external environment. But realize our internal environment really does have a lot to do with that external environment more than we know. And that's the element of manifestation that gets into where your attention goes, energy flows. So we have so many resources here that can really help you to live the way you want to live, no matter what environment you're in.
Not to brag, but I have the best mom ever, and she deserves so much more than a typical bouquet of roses and drugstore card that everyone else gets on Mother's Day. She deserves something personalized and thoughtful that makes her feel special. That is why I'm sending her a card from Moonpig. Moonpig has thousands of one-of-a-kind designs you can personalize with photos and personal messages, or opt for a large size card for an extra special touch. Their cards are so cute. I am definitely going to be the favorite child this Mother's Day. Mom, plug your ears, but Moonpig is also incredibly affordable. It's the same price as a drugstore card. Postage is already included in the price, and it takes minimal effort. You don't need to leave your house to pick out a card or take it to the mailbox. Simply pick it out online, design, and place your order from the convenience and comfort of your own home. Whether you're celebrating a mom in your life or have upcoming birthdays, graduations, weddings, or other celebrations that call for an extra personalized touch for the people you love, get all your card needs from Moonpig. We have a special offer for you. Use code EVERYGIRLFREE for a free card from April 22nd until May 12th. That is EVERYGIRLFREE for a free card before May 12th. I would also love for you to walk us through basically like the steps, like for people out there who are like, I definitely need to improve my self-esteem. What are the steps?
Okay. I'm going to give you one phrase first, and this is going to encompass all of the steps. Mental imagery. I like to use the phrase positive mental practice because I feel like it breaks down and reminds me exactly what I'm doing. I am going into my mind to practice these things positively. Whenever you want to make a change, the problem is sometimes it's almost like we're holding our breath and hoping the change happens. You're like, I'm going to have this salad and I hope I lose 10 pounds. And you're like, open your eyes, like, oh no, I didn't. What happened? It's not just going to be like, I walk into that place and I just took that job opportunity. That's a lot of physical. And yes, I agree with like the Tony Robbins who says, take massive action. I agree with that. But I think it needs to be massive inspired action. And the only way we get to massive inspired action is by first navigating what's going on in our minds. So that step of positive mental practice or mental imagery is when we really get into our mind and start reviewing the way we want scenarios to go, the way we want to respond, the way we want to be in a situation, the way we want to see ourselves. Start giving yourself internal mental practice with it working out the way you want it to. If you cannot see in your mind, just in the pretend imagination privately, and no one can see what you're doing in there, if you won't even find success in there, good luck trying to find it out here. You have not trained your brain to say you can have this because your brain has never seen it. So you're asking your brain, body, and heart to reach for a goal physically up this application and walk into that interview. Something that your brain has never seen, your brain and heart has never seen or felt just in the private recesses of your practice. So it sounds so silly, but this is the time to bring back that pre-kindergarten imagination. Imagine someone saying, you're in, you're exactly what our school or our job or our company needed. Imagine, and how do you feel? Elevate those emotions, literally get into the state of it. And that does so many things for the brain, creating neurological connections. When you put emotion to it, this is what your brain says. Wait, did you feel that? That was real. Record it. And so every time it records it, your brain now has this as a memory. So I'll give you an example. Before coming on to talk to Josie in real life, I may or may not have had a good 10-minute conversation with her when there was no one on the other line. And I imagine that we just loved each other and she was amazing and I was amazing and everything flowed. And so to my brain, this is our second conversation. My brain was ready for it to be a success because I already planted that imagery there. I already elevated my emotions and felt how good this could feel. So my brain's like, that's a real possibility. It happened before. So imagine doing that before a job interview. Imagine doing that before a date. Imagine doing that before talking to a coworker or presenting at work. Imagine doing that when you're going to reach out to your children or start a new sport. So it really is the element of preparation and telling your brain and heart, I can do this. And mentally and emotionally, I've done this before. I've been here and I'm creating the path so that when I go to do it physically, your brain will send you this. Oh, yeah, you did it before. Go ahead, girl. It worked out last time. And so now you have this team behind you and it's a team of your brain and your heart. And that I would say is the number one thing. Start practicing and playing around. And if you're not good with imagination, write it down. Get in your journal and write full on stories out. Well, when Oprah was on the phone today, she was like, girl, you're amazing, right? It is literally a real tool and it's backed by science. And it shows that the field around the human body actually expands when your heart and your mind are on the same page like this in positive resonance. They call it coherence. And the field around the human body expands, which then leads to our favorite magical word here, manifestation. You become a greater magnet.
First of all, I hope that imaginary me was fun.
You were amazing. No, amazing. It was the best. That's how I knew. I was ready.
That's awesome. That makes so much sense because so much of what we're doing that's holding our self-esteem back is actually the opposite. Like a lot of us are naturally going to the, what if I'm awkward? What if they don't like me? So then we're going through all the opposite, which is all the bad things that could go wrong. So it makes sense to just replace that with, my brain's going to look at all the things that could go right.
You nailed it. You nailed it because the opposite is exactly how we develop anxiety. When I get women, professional women, I have like CEOs I work with. And when they're talking about, oh my gosh, I'm so anxious. I'm like, okay, tell me about the last thing that made you anxious. And you'll hear the story is basically every possible scenario that could go wrong. And I'm like, fair enough. I'm not here to tell you like, don't think negative. But now that you're done, can you please tell me the other possibility? Because you're being unfair. You're literally telling me out of a 50-50 shot, you're going to lean on the 50 negative, completely obliterate the 50% chance it could be positive, and you're going to go through your life like that. So of course you're anxious. Of course you're not going to want to show up. You have not given any airtime to the possibility that this could work. And that's only fair. That's just a mathematical fair equation. 50-50 shot. So I want to hear you describe it the other way. And so you'll hear them like, well, I could walk in and we could vibe and I could close a contract. And I'm like, tell me more about that, because that's much more interesting to me than that other nonsense you were talking.
If you have a big meeting with your boss and the anxiety is going, well, what if I get fired? Then that's a great time to walk through. Okay, what are some things that could go really well? But let's say you get fired. I think you can still apply it to, okay, the spiral is I'm not worthy of anything. I suck. I'm the worst. Like, of course I got fired. I'll never find success. Change it then. Then yes. Do the, this firing was the best thing for me because of what's going to come out of it.
Yeah, 100%. At any juncture, at any point in the experience, you can shift to the other opportunities, the other possibility. We've just become so addicted and programmed and practiced and habitual about, oh, there's an opportunity, go negative. That's just not fair. I'm not telling you you can't do that. I'm not telling you that nothing will ever go wrong. I'm telling you that you have a very, very clear and truthful and honest choice to go down the other path and see what that looks like. And when you do that, you literally create chemical changes in your body and chemical signatures in your body. And you're literally slowing down the flow of cortisol and your fight or flight responses. And you're activating parasympathetic nervous system. And now you're getting into a little bit more relaxed. Like, you can do this to actually help yourself. It's not just a, hey, why don't you think of it in a positive way so that you can be happy? Yeah, that too, but it's going to affect your performance because I feel more capable because I've been thinking more capable thoughts. I've given my brain practice with me nailing this. So I'm going to be able to go into it more effectively, more efficiently with the best of me. I'm really going to be able to produce what it is that I'm able to produce at the top level. I'm able to produce it right now. If I practice that train of thought, I'm going to bring that person in there with me. And the hormones and chemicals are going to flow, are going to match that. I'm going to have a little more dopamine in me. It really is a habit, and it's something we can do deliberately. And I want us to take our power back, particularly as women, and understand that things may get difficult. Sure, I'm not here to deny that, but I'm here to tell you that there is always another option. And a big part of my work is making sure we know our options. If I tell you you must only be happy, then I've also taken options away from you. So I'm not here to tell you must only be happy. I'm here to tell you that there are ways and methods and tools and resources that you can use to get yourself back on track from every scenario, including life and death, literally every scenario. Different amount of time might be needed and different types of resources will be needed, but we can get ourselves back from any scenario.
And I would imagine that negative emotions like grief, sadness, anger, there's still probably a place in self-esteem for those. I think that a lot of it has to be acknowledging it's okay that I'm sad right now because I know I love myself. I know that I'm here for me. I know I will get out of it and I can be okay. I can sit in it. I can feel my feelings,
yes,
knowing that there is a light at the end of the tunnel because of the self-esteem, not in spite of it.
100%. And I feel like there's a combo there because on one hand, you can say, I'm going to sit and experience these emotions because this is where I am right now. And I have the confidence, I have the self-esteem to know that this is not going to end me, but I am here and I just want to feel it. So I think that's one way. And then another way that we've been taught to look at it is to say to yourself, I am actually not these emotions. These emotions are something that's happening to me. So there's this meditation and it's basically believing that you're the pond. So you're just this big body of water and you're always this divine calm, the sense of love, just this isness. And then in come these fish, like they're plopping in. So there's like the angry fish and the mean fish, the sad fish. If I'm the pond and I realize, oh, that person just really pissed me off. And I'm like, look, here comes the crazy fish just dropped in my... And I'm like, oh, and it came with anger and it brought sadness and fear. And but when you sit and say, I'm the pond, I am this divine, amazing being. And yet these things just entered my experience. You kind of can separate and just observe those thoughts and observe those feelings swimming around you and say, okay, yeah, I definitely see where I am experiencing this anger. Oh, hell yeah, it's here. And sometimes I'll tell my kid, I'm like, no, honey, this is not a fish. This is a whale. Mommy needs a minute. But the idea is just to kind of keep it separate so that you don't become like, I am anger. That I am a really powerful word. So to be able to separate is another method you can use and say, this is the emotion, it's here, and I'm just going to watch it swirl around until it swims on by. But either way you look at it, whether it's I'm sitting in it and this is where I am, or it's separate from me and this is what I'm experiencing, either way, there is power in saying, I'm confident enough and aware enough to see it, recognize it, and work through it. And to also see, can I use this to my advantage? I think the saddest and most negative experiences in my entire life have 100% unequivocally, unarguably been the most amazing catalysts for my growth. I had two choices. It was either going to bury me or it was going to make me fly. And I was like, get your wings, baby. Many of you listening have done that, but you never gave yourself credit for doing that. There was something awful that happened. You got better. And then you keep going back to how awful that was. And it still was awful. But if we can give a little bit of attention and airtime to, man, ever since that moment, I flew. I've been amazing. I've done this. Then you can start to see, wow, there was purpose in that pain. And I've made a commitment to myself and I'm always going to lean on the purpose in any pain and I'm not going to lean on the pain. The pain is a shark that I was tied to and now the shark is gone and I took my lesson. I'm not tying myself to the shark as a reminder. Stay with me, shark. No, shark, get your ass away. Thank you so much. I am going to go this way with the lesson. That's just how I've been programming my mind over the years. There was hard times in my life, yes. And now I'm awesome.
Yeah. So self-esteem is not, I never experience anger or fear or sadness. Self-esteem is knowing I may feel sadness, I may feel anger, but I am not sad. I am not angry. It's something we feel. Like those are the fish, but we're the pond.
Yes. And if you have a laser focused desire on your quality of life and on living this experience to your best and highest potential, there's a commitment that comes with that. So not far behind these negative emotions, you're always going to want to find your way back. It's like your compass just keeps wanting to point to positive because you've trained yourself that way. You've practiced just like how a sad person or someone who's perpetually focused on negative, they get that hit when they're in that negative space. We can contrarily get that hit from being in that positive space. So you want to be able to say to yourself, I am human. I am going to feel a range of emotions. I'm going to feel upset. I'm going to get confused. I'm going to feel bad. I'm going to feel sad. I'm going to feel nervous. That has nothing to do with who I am at my core. Those are experiences. And to the degree that I'm committed to living this life at the fullest, to the degree that I'm committed to feeling amazing and bringing my best and watering the seed and giving apples to the world, to the degree I'm committed to that is to the degree that I'm going to work through this emotion, not rushing, not anyone else's timeline. But I don't want to be here. I got into this emotional Uber, so I'm going to stay as long as it takes for me to get this ride back. And I'm going back to my happy place because it's a real place for me. It's not faking, it's not pretending, it's a decision. And I decide to live there because everyone around me benefits, my body benefits, my life benefits, and everything I'm here to do on this planet gets to come to fruition because of it. So that's my duty, is to get back to this place and still acknowledge, yeah, I'm going to feel everything. I'm human, but I'm not living there.
You know, an emotional Uber is definitely a first for the podcast.
Okay. I literally sit down.
I'm obsessed with that.
I'm like, I am your Uber. You're going to tell me where you want to go. And I'm going to take you there. I don't want to sit here. The meter's running and we're sitting in your anger and we're just sitting here. I want to get out of this neighborhood and I want to get you where you want to go. So you have a couple minutes. Tell me the thing. But we are on a mission. Where do you want to go? We need to spend more time driving there.
Dr. Simone, we are going to wrap up with some rapid fire questions. Your go-to song that you listen to when you need a self-esteem boost.
This is where I'm giving away all of my secrets now. It is definitely some very inappropriate hip-hop music with lots of bass and words that we should not be listening to that makes me feel like a baddie. Or it's reggae because I'm Jamaican, so it's also reggae.
Love it. Whatever makes you tap into the energy you need to tap into.
Oh, yeah. I see my dog looking at me when I get in that energy. He's like, what are you doing? I'm flipping my hair. I'm pointing my finger in the mirror. She's like, what?
She's like going to go hide under the bed.
I'm like, don't tell anyone what you've seen here, puppy.
Okay. Your self-esteem icon. Any celebrity or character that you think is a really amazing example of self-esteem?
I'm going to go with Dr. Joe Dispenza. I love Dr. Joe Dispenza because I think that he had to have the courage to bring these metaphysical principles and the wisdom to back them by science and the attraction and the manifestation skill to pull so many people to really understand and journey and benefit from this mission. So he's my guy right now, totally.
And he really does, like, so much of it is self-esteem. 100%.
I know. Are you listening, Joe? Do you hear that? Let's work together. Okay.
Joe, call her. And last question for you, a book that changed your life.
Oh my gosh. I'm one of those people. Every book I read, I'm like, oh, that was the one. That changed. And then I read another one. I'm like,
no, get it.
That book was. Obviously, it's going to be some Joe Dispenza stuff, but I love metaphysics. So Neville Goddard is a big one for me. He's old school. I love Abraham Hicks. I just read this book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. It changed my life. It was the last one that changed my life. And then the Go-Giver series is probably the one I want to shout out the most. And I think that that changed my perspective on giving, receiving, loving, being, and having the confidence to kind of do all of that. It was a business book told in a story. So I really like that.
I need that. Yes. I mean, that's my reading list.
Oh, yeah. So good.
And Simone, where can everyone find you, work with you, give us all the details?
My website is theselfesteemdoctor.com. And on Instagram, it's the same thing, theselfesteemdoctor.
Thank you so much. You're so inspiring. Your work is so incredible. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing all of your expertise.
Oh, thank you so much, Josie, for having me. It meant the world. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. I know I sure did. Please do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe. It really makes a huge difference for our show so we can keep growing and bringing the content that you love. If you want more info, you can find us at The Evergirl Podcast on Instagram or theevergirlpodcast.com. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.